fifth case this morning is Temme v. Bean's Company.
Now I have a chance to at least to read the notes. Your Honor, George Groff representing the appellants here. As this court well knows, this case is a retiree health insurance case, of which the court has had many. This one, the retiree's claim is based upon a closing agreement which has no terminal date, no duration clause, much like the case in Zielinski.
Counsel, could you tell me approximately how many members are in the class?
60-some, Your Honor.
60?
60-some, about 63, I think.
That includes the original insured and spouses, I gather.
Yes, there are some spouses, right. Now, we have set forth in our brief extensively why we think factually the court has failed to properly analyze the closing agreement. We've also set forth the cases which we think this court has issued which support our position. So what I'd like to do is just take these few minutes allotted to me and summarize our position as to why the court was wrong in granting summary judgment in a case of this type. The first reason is that if you look at the court's entire decision, and we're talking about the summary judgment decision, and I want to make that distinction, the court basically ignored Zielinski. In Zielinski, your court indicated that if you have a closing agreement without a terminal date, without a duration clause, the court is not going to interpolate one. That's exactly what the trial court did here. They put in a terminal date based upon the collective bargaining agreement. Secondly, we think the trial court gave no credence to the standard this court has developed for cases of this type. And that standard, going quite a ways back, says you got to look at all of the documents involved, and you have to analyze them as a whole, and you have to give them an ordinary and common sense interpretation. What the judge really did here is he just ignored the Zielinski ruling, and he ignored this rule I've just indicated about reading the documents as a whole, and he jumped on the fact that there's no explicit promise in the closing agreement that these are lifetime benefits.
Well, even if the collective bargaining agreement was incorporated into the closing agreement, why wouldn't it mean that retirees were eligible to get the benefits as defined by Section 9.02, but only as long as the benefits were offered?
It does say eligible, mm-hmm. And it does make them eligible. And that's the next thing I was going to cover, but the closing agreement specifically says, has a specific provision, number 5, which says that you can reference the collective bargaining agreement in order to effectuate the closing agreement. And that was not done here. And then I'll go into the argument then that I was going to do, because I think it answers your question. This closing agreement, it spells out a retiree medical benefit for some past retirees and for some future retirees. It does not explain what this benefit consists of, what the features of it are, nor does it state how long it's supposed to last. But, like I say, there's a specific clause in the closing agreement. You can reference back to the collective bargaining agreement to effectuate the closing agreement. When you do that, what do you find? The answer to your questions. It says there shall be a benefit which shall last for the lifetime of the retirees and spouses. The collective bargaining agreement, which if you go back to it, it also indicates the main features. Two of the features are, number one, the deductibles, which were greatly enhanced and enlarged by the employer in 2005, and the prescription drug coverage, which was guaranteed in the collective bargaining agreement and was completely eliminated in the year 2007. Now, what the judge really is doing here is going back to something this court has condemned, namely the magic formula, magic words. The court way back in Bidlack said to the trial courts, you don't have to have a prescribed formula. You don't have the words jump out to you. You have to look at the documents in their entirety and give them a decent analysis. Now, he didn't do that here. He simply went into the magic formula again.
Let me ask you this. Is it your position that Bemis needs to provide the exact level of benefits described in the 1982 collective bargaining agreement?
That's correct. And I do understand that under Zielinski, there could be some areas where they could be modified, but not the specific ones we're talking about, because they are specifically spelled out, 100% drug coverage and deductibles. To summarize our argument, all you really have to do is look at the trial court's statement in the class certification order, which is on page 19 of our brief. And he got it right there. He said the language guarantees only the eligibility of individuals and does not state outright that the agreement guarantees the retired employee medical benefit itself. However, a common sense interpretation of the agreement and Bemis's treatment of the retirees tell us that such a guarantee was intended. And I don't have much time, so I would ask the court to read that quote in its entirety. He says in his finality on that, thus logic requires that the agreement incorporate a previous retiree health benefit guaranteed not appearing within the five pages. And what we really come down to is he seems to be saying, you better say in there you got it 100%, you're guaranteed forever, or you don't get it. This court has not said. You said you take all the documents, you look at them, and then you come up with a conclusion. And he hasn't done that. I would submit to the court that this order of the trial judge has to be reversed for two reasons. Number one, because it does a grave injustice to these 80-plus-year-old people. And secondly, I think this court tried to straighten things out in Zielinski. And you take a look at the evolution of cases. What this does is goes back to the, like I say, the practice that you've condemned before, the magic formula. Thank you very much.
Mr. Kinney.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kevin Kinney. I represent the defendant Bemis Company in this matter. Just to follow up on one of the comments, we're going through this exercise of legal archaeology in terms of attempting to go backwards through documents. What the plaintiffs fail to grasp, or at least tell this court, is this collective bargaining agreement. This agreement wasn't in effect at the time that the plant closing agreement was even being negotiated. That agreement had expired by its own term months and months earlier, and that collective bargaining agreement was never revised. Okay, and I think that's also part of the issue that you see with respect to this reliance on the class certification. The issue with the class certification is we had a group of what I'll call pre-expired collective bargaining agreement retirees, and then you had a class of post-expired collective bargaining agreement retirees. All right, and what our position was at that time, and right or wrong, the judge didn't agree with us. But the fact of the matter is, we said, look, you can't have a class of individuals that consists of both post-contract and pre-contract retirees and say, oh, they're all covered by the plant closing agreement. And the judge pushed that all together. And I think, I think that, quite frankly, the judge stepped up to it in the footnote in his decision and says, I probably overread what I was doing, and I simply made the assumption that that collective bargaining agreement, albeit expired, had been carried forward. So I think that's the honest, straight-up answer on why the judge clarified himself on that issue, because it was a different issue.
I had one question.
Yeah.
Is Bemis still providing health care coverage to Hassan employees who retired before the 1985 plant shutdown and closing agreement?
Before? They treated all of the people have been treated the same, whether they were pre or post collective bargaining agreement they've all been treated identical.
Have there been any changes other than the increase in the deductible and cutting the prescription benefits?
I do not know if there's been any additional plan design changes or other moves to modify, terminate any benefits since.
But they have consistently since, what is it, 85 or whenever this was entered into, provided benefits except making those two changes that I discussed.
Yes, I would. We never really spent a lot of time on whether there were other plan design changes. These were the ones that, I'll say, triggered this litigation, and it was primarily the change on the prescription drug plan that triggered this litigation.
Is this part of a bigger plan that these people have belonged to?
No, actually they're not. They're that's a freestanding plan.
Go ahead. I wasn't sure if you were done. The 1982 collective bargaining agreement, is that in the record?
The collective bargaining agreement itself,
yes, it is.
Yeah, that's the one that would have expired on June 30th of 1985. And then again, a strike ensued. People are out on strike, and then 4 or 5 months later, a decision is made that this facility is going to be shut down. So you've got this long hiatus between this contract that expires by its own terms. And that's what's so troubling in this case, is because I keep reading the plaintiff's brief and I see this. It was incorporated by reference. It was preserved. It was carried forward. I mean, when I read the brief, I said, oh, I must have missed that. I went back. There's no citation to anywhere in the plant closing agreement that uses those magic words, and I said magic words in terms of the incorporated, preserved, or carried forward. But I think, you know, it's one of those, if you say it enough, then people will actually believe it. That didn't happen. That plant closing agreement goes to extreme lengths not only to kill the already dead collective bargaining agreement, but end the relationship with the union and end the relationship with the employee. It actually goes the exact opposite direction. You know, and the other thing that I wanted to point out, too, is in terms of this issue of magic words, you know, the reason that we use that term magic words is because we're always looking for something that's going to give us a signal or some type of indication that these benefits were intended to go forward. Look at this plan closing agreement when it talks about the pension benefits. Guess what words it uses? It says, we've decided we're going to vest the pension benefits. That's a magic word. That's got legal meaning. Then you skip over to the health insurance issue, and it says, you're eligible for a retiree medical benefit, nothing else. And I would agree that this court has instructed us, look, you don't need a magic word, but I think the judge also got it right and says, but you got to show me something. There's got to be some term, word, phrase, and it doesn't have to be vested. It doesn't have to be lifetime or guaranteed. But it's got to be something to indicate that there is going to be an unalterable, unchangeable promise on a go-forward basis. And then the other thing that I would also point out, too, is what we're also seeing here is that this argument is really based on an attempt to say, well, there's no presumption against vesting because this is a plant closing agreement. Well, the problem now is the plant closing agreement only gets Mr. Graff so far. Now he's got to go backwards and get inside that collective bargaining agreement. Okay. Well, then you run back inside the already expired collective bargaining agreement, and guess what? Well, then the presumption against vesting is going to attach. So we've got the argument on the first hand that plant closing agreements, there is no presumption against vesting because it's different than a labor agreement. But the labor agreement, because it's short-term in duration, we can apply that presumption against vesting. Okay? And you've got to ignore one presumption and apply another. And he really wants this court to say, well, there should be a new presumption, which is that if a plant closing agreement is silent in terms of cutting off a health insurance benefit, then at that point in time there should be a presumption applied in favor of lifetime guaranteed unalterable benefits. And that is not what this court has ever said in Zielinski or Deal or any of those other cases.
You've been paying benefits pretty much as originally thought to be since 85, right?
Pretty much, Your Honor. Yeah, I would say that's a fair statement. Yes, yes. And I think back to the question that the judge posed earlier, you know, the fact of the matter is, and this court has long recognized, the fact that we've done something for a period of time, you know, no inference is drawn one way or the other than the fact that that's what we did. And we did tell people that you're going to be eligible for a retiree benefit. That didn't mean we couldn't change it. That doesn't mean we can't eliminate it.
What's the savings to the discontinuing the prescription drug benefits?
I don't think we ever came up with an exact number, but I would to say that we're probably talking $100,000+ a year is probably, you know, probably low, close. You know, it's never been part of the record. So, but those conclude my remarks, unless there are other questions, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time? You have 3 minutes.
Let me just get one thing clear. What was your question, Your Honor, about whether they're paying the benefits?
I wanted to know whether the Hassan employees who retired before the 85 plan shut down were still getting health coverage.
The answer is no. They were. Several of the benefits were changed in 2005. Some of the benefits were eliminated in 2007, and all of them have been eliminated now.
Okay.
I'd like to point out a couple things about his reference to the fact that because this is a terminated collective bargaining agreement, you shouldn't be able to use it. Well, that's exactly what you did in Zielinski. Those are all terminated collective bargaining agreements when you're dealing with closing agreements. And interestingly enough, the only two closing agreement cases that I know of are Deal, which was of a limited term closing agreement, and Zielinski, which had no terminal date. And that was a terminated collective bargaining agreement where the court indicated the language was. The other point I want to cover is he makes a point about vesting. Well, vesting is a term of art which was very well known in the area of pensions because of ERISA back in 1985. I don't know that you'd ever find a contract that used the term vesting when you were dealing with health benefits. But he's suggesting that because we didn't use it here in the area of the health benefits, it should be considered against us. I can never remember the Latin term. Excluding one means the other or something like that. But you note that when they were spelling out in the closing agreement what benefits go to the active employees as far as health benefits, they spelled a timeout. They only got 12 months of benefits, and they had to pay for them. No such language appears anywhere as far as the retired employees. It just simply states that's the benefit. And I want to draw attention to made a little mistake before. I said paragraph 5. Paragraph 6 of the closing agreement says, and it's much broader, but it says that you can refer to the collective bargaining agreement to the extent that reference to the same may be necessary to effectuate the provisions of this agreement. Now, what collective bargaining agreement do you think they're talking about? The last one they had, which was the 82 agreement, which expired sometime in 1985. So the mere fact it was terminated, the parties understood that that's the one they're talking about, and you can refer to it. And when you do that, everything else falls in place, that the benefit they were talking about was, like in Zielinski, carried over from the collective bargaining agreement to the closing agreement. Thank you very much.
The case will be taken under advisement, and we move.